This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. The Ganges River begins in the Himalayan town of Deprayag, and after 1,560 miles, empties into the Bay of Bengal. It is the world's third largest river based on river flow and is estimated to support 10% of the world's population through agriculture, drinking water, bathing, and as a source of food. The Ganges is also one of the most polluted rivers in the world. At the heart of the problem is that many Hindus believe that being placed in the Ganges after death will break this cycle of reincarnation and help them achieve moksha, or eternal liberation. But that's not the only problem faced by those who are desperately trying to clean up a river that is considered the most sacred by Hindus. Journalist Cameron Conaway has been reporting on the state of the Ganges, and we found his article, "The Ganges River is Dying Under the Weight of Modern India." That was at Newsweek. Cameron, welcome back to Word of Mouth.
Thanks for having me, Virginia.
So I guess at the heart of this belief in Ganga, the Hindu goddess believed to be the personification of the Ganges. What can you tell us about how that influences how the Ganges is treated today?
Sure. So, yeah, I think it's important to note that there is a separation here. So there is Ganges, the river, and that is the body of water, right? But most Indians, they view it as the Ganga first. So it's the self-cleaning river god. It's the mythological story of the river that lived in heaven, but chose to come to earth to purify their souls. And it's a very elaborate, gorgeous story.
So self-cleaning, explain that. Do they believe that they can pollute it as much as possible and it will just clean itself?
Yes.
Wow.
This is a large part of the problem in terms of the pollution caused by the people themselves, but it's also this idea has infiltrated the politics and has made it very difficult to pass any kind of legislation whereby people can be blamed and held responsible for what they're doing to the river.
So what are the main sources of pollution of the river?
I think industry and business are the most severe sources of pollution. There are huge hotel organizations like the Radisson Blue that pump their chemicals into the Ganga without having really to answer to anybody. And so businesses kind of across the board are able to do this. It seems that things are tightening up and there is a little more awareness towards this, but really, I mean, they're able to pump all of their waste product right into the river.
And waste product includes human waste in this case.
Yeah, right. So they don't have to pay to have their waste product cleaned. And then just the chemicals that they use, they can just drain it all in. And yeah, I mean, that just has disastrous consequences.
So millions of gallons of industrial effluents, raw sewage draining into the Ganges every day. Any idea of how much this actually costs the nation in terms of disease, for example, or the inability to use the water and need other sources?
You know, there hasn't been a definitive study that can compile all of those, you know, myriad influences together into a single figure. But this belief in the river is so pervasive that, you know, people believe that nobody gets sick and nobody dies from the consequences of what's happening. And it's just simply not true. I mean, there are 600,000 Indians a year living along the Ganges River basin that die just from diarrhea. And I would argue that most of those cases can be directly contributed to the water situation.
Well, the major sources for this pollution are often believed to be from the poor and the vulnerable who live
right
along the banks. You point out that the data does not bear that out. What's the story here?
Yeah, so everybody I researched, you know, they said it's human nature and it's so much easier to see a figure such as, 600 million people in India do not use toilets, or, you know, I think it's 45% of Indians have a cell phone, but 31% have a toilet. So it's sort of easy to visualize, wow, that's a lot of waste product just being pumped into the river. And so then you end up blaming the people who live along the river, which in some sense, you know, does need to happen, that is contributing. But everybody that I talked to said, yeah, but that's such a small percentage of what's actually happening here. It's really the businesses just pumping millions of gallons of effluent right into the river that's the true problem here.
Are there different areas where the pollution is worse, better along the path of the Ganges?
So, yes, in Varanasi, you know, the city of learning and burning, as it's often called, there are so many religious festivals there. And And the result of that is that, you know, this is where more people view the Ganges River as Ganga. And so pollution just skyrockets.
So is this the festival we may have seen pictures of, you know, where pilgrims all come and bathe in the river together?
That was probably the one. Yeah. I mean, there's so many all throughout the country, but it was probably one in Varanasi. But when I was there in June 2013, it was to the point where, you know, my wife and I took a rowboat out into the river, and our tour guide just put a wooden plank down for us to, you know, step barefoot into the water and then into the boat. And we just couldn't do it. I mean, it was like, you know, if we had some kind of sore on our foot, it probably would have been 30 minutes later that it was infected. However, then I went up north in Rishikesh, and it's a whole different ball game. I actually was able to get in the water. And there was a period of, you know, 30 minutes or so where I didn't see any trash. So I think there are some regions where they're figuring it out. They're figuring out how to keep this river clean despite the booming population. And I think they're on to something that really needs to take root in the rest of India.
Well, I'd love to talk to you more about that. But I guess one of the things that surprised me in your article, illegal slaughterhouses and tanneries. Now, I thought that the cow was sacred in India. That was kind of surprising to me.
It surprised me, yeah, because, yeah, I mean, I had spent a lot of time there, and I had never personally witnessed anybody causing harm to the cows walking across the street. I mean, they were almost treated as dogs and taken care of. But again, the research and the people that I interviewed, and then just the statistics on economics showed that, you know, Kanpur itself is known as the leather city of the world. I think over 3,000 illegal slaughterhouses. And a lot of people consider, you know, the export of cow meat in India is the largest of any country in the world. So there was a hidden story there that I uncovered as I was trying to unravel the story of the river.
We're speaking with Cameron Conaway. He's a reporter who's been doing some work on the Ganges River, which is horribly polluted. And Cameron, that seems like a story that we've been hearing for a long time, that the Ganges is polluted. But now the Prime Minister of India, Narendra Modi, has made cleaning the Ganges a passion project and says he's going to clean the river by October 2019. That's the anniversary of Mahatma Gandhi's birth. So, first of all, how realistic is that?
It's not realistic whatsoever.
Is this just political?
I really think it is. You know, I had high hopes, and a lot of the people that I interviewed, researchers at different universities, they did as well. I've seen that hope start to wane a bit. But, you know, Modi was just in Silicon Valley. I mean, there was a, you know, hashtag Modi in Silicon Valley, mm-hmm. hashtag Wired India. And I think it really upset a lot of people. There was a journalist, Sanam Sharma, who wrote for the Huffington Post, "Modi is selling a dream, but we're living a nightmare." And, you know, what does it matter if you have Wi-Fi everywhere if you don't have a sustainable, clean source of water in your country? And so that was what I was trying to get at here with this story.
So what's his plan? What's his strategy for pulling this off?
I think the big strategy for him has been this toilets before temples mantra that he's really been pushing it. And it's just a beautiful alliteration and it's really catching on. But again, the research is panning out. I mean, some of the places that I went in India, I'm seeing 50, 60 toilets just sitting there. They have been donated by people. You know, if you build it, doesn't mean they will come. There's no education. A lot of the people actually think that using a toilet is more unsanitary. So it's just not part of their culture. So I really think there needs to be a cultural shift. And it's very hard for me to say that as an outsider, obviously. But from what I've seen and people I've talked to, this seems to be the belief of what needs to happen.
Any signs of improvement so far since Modi made this toilets before temples plan?
You know, I think the one important shift that's happened is there just were not a lot of toilets in schools. And so I really think it's helping to shore up some of the gender issues happening in India. So they've really made sure that, you know, the girls have a clean toilet to go to and that they don't have to walk too far to get there. So, I mean, that's absolutely been a positive. To say that that's had an impact on the cleanliness of the river, I'm not so sure.
How about technology? I mean, there are ways that rivers can be cleaned with filtering, with technological solutions. Is that happening there?
It is, yeah. I mean, they look like monsters, some of these machines. They look like, you know, something that landed from Mars. And they're cleaning the surface level of the water, so they're able to pick up the, you know, the plastic bottles and those kind of things. But even the research that's happening there, a lot of other people will cite an 1896 study from a British bacteriologist and then a 1916 study from a Canadian microbiologist that said, hey, you know, the mythology that we believe in, that the Ganges River can clean itself, it's actually true. These two researchers proved it. So yeah, I mean, it's this kind of battle between religion in a lot of ways and then rational thought. And I've just been fascinated by it for years.
You know, you talked about changing the mindset around toilets, but trying to convince people who believe the river is this omnipotent force that you can continue discarding trash and toxic waste in the river or placing dead bodies will not harm the river. What can be done to actually change that mindset? And again, of course, you are a Western journalist looking at, you know, how things have been thought about in another place. There's a lot of sensitivity to that.
There is, and you know, the story that I wrote here has been told countless times, and there hasn't been any significant changes made. So clearly, a Westerner coming in and telling the story again, no matter how well, it's not going to change anything. But what I noticed and what I really wanted to emphasize in the story was a lot of religious leaders in India are coming together, and they're realizing that at the heart of it, Hinduism and any religion is about story. It's about the power of story. And so they're learning to reframe Hindu mythology around the Ganga River in the context of, you know, you can't harm the river by putting stuff in it, but you can harm everything that relies upon the river. So that plastic bottle gets broken down a little bit, and a cow, you know, licks it up and chokes on that. And that has actually happened. So it's linking those two sacred elements of the cow and the river in the context of a story. And so that is a large reason why actually the river is much more clean in Rishikesh than other places, because they have a kind of interfaith dialogue really pushing that agenda.
Rishikesh, thought to be the yoga capital of the world. Are you optimistic about the rest of it?
I don't know. That's, you know, I try to be, and I think if the leaders in Rishikesh can really continue to push their message, I mean, they've traveled to London and they're doing, I think, as good a job as they can. But it really, there has to be the political will coupled with that. So that's what I'm waiting for. And that's why, you know, I could see myself writing a story in a couple of years, trying to chart if any change has happened.
Well, let's hope for that. Cameron, thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Cameron Conaway, he's a former MMA fighter, an award-winning poet, and a journalist. He's been reporting on the state of the Ganges River with the support of a grant from the Pulitzer Center on Crisis Reporting. And we found his article at Newsweek, and you can read it for yourself at wordofmouthradio.org.